All right. So today on the show, I have Mr. Ben Azadi, best-selling author, speaker, founder of Keto Camp, and also a good friend of mine who I met back in Miami when this dude owned Lift Free CrossFit. And we connected back in 2014.
Yeah, that's right. About four or five years ago.
Right. So it's, 5 years of evolution of seeing you go from Lift Free to Keto Camp.
Yes, and right back to you, seeing all of the cool things you're up to. So thank you for having me, Brother Curtis.
Absolutely, man. So thanks for jumping on. So today, Ben, I really just want to tap into your story of the Ben Azadi's personal journey of where he came from to where he is now. So Ben, why don't you kind of just dive in and tell us of how you even got into the whole wellness and health factor of life. What led you into even want to tap into that?
Yeah, it all started about 10 years ago when I went through my own personal weight loss transformation. But even prior to that, for most of my life growing up, I was the fat kid, bullied, picked on. I was afraid to go to the beach, even though I lived right down the street from the beach, because I didn't want to take off my shirt. And when I did, my friends would pick on me. And I really had low self-confidence, low self-esteem, and I was eating a really bad diet. I was addicted to video games, and as a teenager, addicted to drugs, and hanging out with the wrong people. So it really showed up in my physical appearance and also my mental state, because I was not just physically obese, I was mentally obese. Uh-huh. I would destroy myself with my thoughts, and I was depressed, and I had to kind of hit rock bottom for me to do something about it and then end up taking control over my circumstances.
Why do you think you got into the eating habits that you had as a young kid?
Yeah, I mean, the truth of it was that it was my responsibility and I was at fault. But back then I was blaming my mother. My mother worked at KFC. Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yep. She would bring home food just about every night, fried chicken, and she would give me whatever I wanted. And so that was a factor. I wouldn't say it was the reason.
Right.
And then my environment, you know, I was hanging around unhealthy people. I was hanging around drug dealers, and I was a byproduct of my environment. So I would say those were two huge influences to what was happening in my life.
What kind of drugs were you into?
Weed, cocaine, a little bit, sometimes I did cocaine, and I even ended up selling weed in high school as well, and then alcohol.
So was this more in, where you were in high school, right after high school? How did you kind of start to get wrapped up in that world a little bit?
I was in high school. I was a junior in high school when I started really getting into drugs. I dropped out of school, and It lasted for about 2 years where I was really fully engulfed in that environment.
And so what are some of the darker times of exploring this environment and living in that? What was like what ended up being the turning point for you?
That's a good question. You know, I don't think I've shared this story before, at least not publicly. I was 17 years old, about to turn 18. I was in my house. My mom was sleeping. My sister was sleeping. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I hear a bang on my bedroom door, like a hard bang. And I'm wondering, like, who the heck is that? Like, my mom could just open the door. So I open the door and just lights are flashing at me. And I get grabbed in my throat, thrown on the bed. And it's 20 plus ATF officers with guns pointed at my face, shotguns, asking me where the guns are, asking me, where are all the weapons? And I see my mom in the background crying, telling me to give the officers the weapons. And they're telling me, where are the weapons? They're screaming at me and they're searching my room, because I had been mixed up with a couple of friends who were selling weapons, and they actually brought some of those weapons to my house for a day. And I don't know how word got around to that, but they thought the weapons were there, and it was a very traumatic experience. And I woke up the next morning saying, I got to do something about my life, because this is you know, what I just put my mom through, I never want to do that again. And that was a huge turning point for me.
So what did you wake up and do the next day?
I started telling the people around me that, you know, I can't hang around you so much. And I started making new associations, and it wasn't that simple. You know, I'm kind of giving you in a nutshell. Right. It was very difficult actually to start cutting people from my life, but I started looking at relationships differently from a different lens ever since that point.
So did you end up going to jail, or did they let you go? What happened?
I didn't go to jail because I didn't have any weapons there. I told them to search the entire house, and they did. They tore everything up. So I didn't go to jail, thank God. But you know, it was a close call because the weapons were in my house a couple days ago.
So just a few days prior, you had the weapons and close to being able to probably spend some time in jail.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so you get this moment of ATF raiding your home, and then you start to slowly eliminate certain friends.
Yeah.
What did you do to start to improve the I know you're improving mental health here as well, but when did you start to dive into the physical as well, into the eating?
Yeah, so I went from being obsessed with smoking weed and hanging around these bad people to transferring that energy to video games. I really got obsessed with video games. I would play 8 to 10 hours every single day, and I even entered tournaments, and I was just really in that world. So to go back to your question, it wasn't until I reached 24 years old that my girlfriend that I was with for about 4 years, she broke up with me. I was working at a dead end job. I was really not inspired by it, a packing and shipping store manager. And she broke up with me, not inspired by my job.
Yeah.
I was obese at this point. I weighed 250 pounds, very unhealthy. I had lower back pain, knee pain, and I was really depressed. I was at a point in my life where I think depression is kind of an understatement, because I was on Google looking for ways to kill myself. I was afraid to be alone, because every time I was alone in a room, I would think about ending my life and ways to end my life. And I wanted to surround myself with people who could talk me out of this. And every time I thought about killing myself, I thought about my mother and what I would leave for her, and it stopped me. So I started reading books, man. I started reading Wayne Dyer and Bob Proctor, and eventually John D. Martini. And Wayne Dyer said something in one of the books that I read. He said, if other people were the cause of your problems, you would have to hire a psychiatrist for the world in order for you to get better. And I thought, damn, isn't that true? I was blaming everyone and everything for my problems, but the real person who's responsible is me. And that was just such a huge turning point in my life.
Wow. So it kind of sounds like the video games like assisted you by ditching the friends to come be a part of your, like, a new friend for some isolation time for you. That kind of led you into getting into, like, the books and whatnot, as long, you know, followed by the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend breaking up with you.
Yeah, totally. It served as something to numb me, something to distract me, the video games did. And there was a lot of energy that I spent on that. And I transfer that energy to starting to reading books and becoming obsessed with health. And that's when I started exercising for the first time, reading nutrition books. And it took about 9 months for me to transform my health. I went from 250 pounds to 170 pounds, 34% body fat to 6% body fat, and being mentally obese to eventually what I call carving out a mental six pack.
So wait, you said in 9 months you lost 100 pounds?
80 pounds.
80 pounds. Okay, so 9 months. You lose 80 pounds. So what did you start to do?
After or during?
Yeah, during. What workouts did you start to get into eating? Like, what was the way that worked for Ben?
Yeah, so I was embarrassed to go to a gym. Like I said, I suffered through self-limiting beliefs and low self-confidence. I didn't want to go to a gym. I didn't want anybody to see me working out because I didn't know anything about fitness, anything about health. So I bought P90X. Mm-hmm. Which is the in-home workout program. And I started doing that in the comfort of my own bedroom.
Yeah.
And I started reading men's health. And I just started touching the surface of the health and fitness industry. And I was so unhealthy that any change I made would yield me results. and I got dramatic results, like rapid results because of that. And I was obsessed. I was really obsessed with achieving a physical six-pack because that was a void I was trying to fill. I'd never had it. my entire life, and I always wanted to have a physical six pack. So that was a driving force for me at that time.
Awesome. So you start doing P90X, you start eating good. Then, so you're at this point, you're still 24, 25?
Yeah, 24, going on 25.
Okay. So what was next in the journey of your, you know, you becoming the health master that you are? So what was next? Were you still working at the shipping company here?
Yes, I was. So I went through the transformation. I was still at the shipping company, the packing and shipping store, and the store was going out of business. You know, it was during the 2008, 2009, the economy was tanking. So the business was doing bad. So the owner told me, hey, in 2 months, we're closing the doors. And she said, I do know somebody who works at a packing and shipping store that's about 10 minutes away, and they're willing to hire you as their packing and shipping manager. So not to worry. So at this point, I lost the weight. I was really getting an interest with health and fitness. A lot of my friends were asking me how I did it, and I was giving them coaching. And I said, man, I want to be a personal trainer. Like, that would be something that I think I would enjoy doing. And I didn't know anything about running a business. I didn't know anything about being a personal trainer. I knew that I had social anxiety to the point, Curtis, where when I was at a grocery store and I was at the checkout counter, I felt so awkward and so weird just like waiting to check out my food. Like, I felt like everybody was looking at me. I didn't know what to say, like real social anxiety.
Yes.
But how the hell can I be a personal trainer? How can I work with people if I can't even like have a conversation? So I had all these thoughts, and I'm like, and I'm reading these books, and they're telling me to like, look at the fear, face towards that direction, live according to your highest values, like just do it. And I'm reading these books and they're inspiring me to do it. So I told the pack and shipping manager that I do not accept your job, and I didn't accept it. And I started my first company, Shred Fat, and I put an ad on Craigslist, South Florida's most affordable personal trainer, $20. I think it was $20 for a full hour session. That's and I had strangers coming to my childhood home. My sister moved out, converted her bedroom into a gym, and I had strangers coming, paying me cash, and I trained them for an hour.
Who was your first client?
Oh man, who was my first client?
You don't have to reveal their name, but who was the first client?
You know, I don't remember their name. I do remember it being a woman. I think it was a woman in her 30s who found me on Craigslist. And then I had another gentleman in Midtown that I would drive to and train him in his condo. But I think it was a woman. I don't remember her name.
So what was the defining factor in you turning down the job?
What was the defining factor?
Yeah, what made you say, fuck it, I'm going to fucking take a chance and put an ad on Craigslist to get some fitness clients?
Yeah, it was the books, that the confidence the books gave me. I was standing on the shoulders of giants who had been in similar situations, and they kind of shared what they did. And I'm like, you know what? They did it. I could do it too. So the books gave me the confidence to do that.
Yeah, I find it interesting because you'll hear, you know, there's different philosophies. Some people will say, well, don't, you know, jump ship until you have the next ship already sailing, right? Don't jump on the other tracks until the other track is going. You have the momentum of whatever you're doing, that you're building it up. But it sounds like you just said, fuck it, I'm going to go to this, and I'm not even going to give the time of day to the shipping and packing anymore.
Yeah, and there is those schools of thoughts, right? It's the tricky part is how do you decide if it's that, you know, like don't drop something that's already working until you have something figured out. Or I always believe that if you commit to something, the creativity falls afterwards. And that's kind of what happened to me.
Yeah.
When you're in that situation, it's like, how do you know?
Yeah. I did the same thing. I was like, well, I'm just going to fucking leave this one job and go to this one. And I didn't really have proof that this new job was making me more money, but I just said, it's got to make more than fucking what I'm making here. So I'm fucking going for it.
And what helped you decide that?
You know what? Richard Branson, actually. His voice of, screw it, let's do it.
Love it.
And that's really one of the defining factors of like, what's the worst that's going to happen?
That's awesome.
So, all right. So you jump into personal training and you start to build the Shred Fat.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's lead me through Shred Fat here as you're just doing personal training.
Yeah.
So are you doing health coaching with this, or is it just physical, physical training?
It's just physical training. Traveling to clients as a mobile trainer and also having them come to my house to train them as well. Shred Fat, I had a website with a blog, but I was not doing any kind of health coaching or nutritional consulting, just only conversational wise in during the session. Other than that, I was not.
So I got to ask you a question prior to what you mentioned before, but what was the most creative way you found that you were going to take your life? What was the most creative way that you were looking like this might be the one to do it?
Well, shooting myself. I felt like that would have been the quickest way and the most painless way.
Yeah.
So it was probably shooting myself.
Interesting. I had a client who came to me the day after, I think it was the day after, this person, I want to identify the sex, but they tried to hang themselves in the garage and it didn't work.
Wow.
Yeah. So just interesting hearing different ways of, you know, researching of how to end one's life.
Yeah. I also thought about drowning myself too.
Now that one would seem a bit more, mentally challenging.
Yeah.
I guess of more of the amount of length it would take.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to, you start doing driving personal training, you're training in your home. So what was the next layer to the story? What was the next adventure for you?
Well, the next adventure was, and here's my thought on before I tell you the next adventure.
Yeah.
I always feel like, I personally believe that there's addiction is not a bad thing. Like an obsession is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of energy to it.
Yep.
So I transferred it from drugs to video games to getting a six pack. So I still had all this energy and I didn't have anything really that an outlet for it because I was doing personal training and it was great, but not like I was really not that inspired by it.
Yeah. Was it the end all be all?
It wasn't the end all be all.
Yeah.
It wasn't my purpose. Then I started getting into the Killers, the music, the rock band, the Killers, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I started actually traveling all across the world to watch them in concert. Like that was my obsession for probably 2 years. I saw them perform, I don't know how many different cities, but 42 times within 2 years, every different city, London, all these different places. So that was the next adventure.
What was it about the Killers that called you to travel around and follow them to see 47 live shows? I mean, you may have seen more shows than any other fan.
Yeah, there's some others that beat me, but what called me was...
What was it about them? What spoke to you?
When I was in my rock bottom, I would listen to their music and it really helped me get out of a dark place. Their music is very inspirational, uplifting, helped me work out as well. And just experiencing their live show was an outer body experience. I had all the endorphins going. I had all these neurochemicals going and that was an addiction for me. So it was a huge connection from my rock bottom to the workouts, to them having a positive message that really helped me get through tough times.
What song or what songs, because obviously they have, you know, some amazing songs. I'm a huge Killers fan too, as you know, so I'm right there with you. But what songs really spoke to you?
They had Be Still is one of the songs that really spoke to me. Mm-hmm. Be Still is a beautiful song.
Yeah.
They also had... They had a song on Sawdust, and they had a line about these pessimistic sufferers tend to drag us down, and how I could use it to turn things around. And they were just, so I would say Be Still was the one that I would go to a lot. And then I would listen to uplifting songs to work out, like When You Were Young.
Yeah.
I would listen to uplifting songs. And a lot of their songs are uplifting, but... Mm-hmm. I always tell people that my favorite Killer song is the one I'm just currently listening to. I really love their entire catalog, and I know you do too.
Yeah. I mean, I remember reading about the main purpose of them was to give faith to humanity through music.
Exactly.
Was there kind of a slogan through what they, you know, what they write and what they, the type of music they perform?
And that's exactly what they did for me, and they still continue to do that for me.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. So you start to, basically, you're touring with the Killers. And not with, you know, obviously traveling with the band, but next to the band, literally.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, so What was one of the cool experiences you had? I mean, that's pretty epic experience that most people never get to go on. So share, what's one of the really cool experiences you got to experience?
Yeah, yeah. So a couple of them came to mind when you asked that question. Number one, I got to see them at Wembley Stadium, and I got to go for free. And there was about 75,000 people there. It was their largest show ever. That was an amazing experience. I also got to see them in Dover, Delaware at the Firefly Festival, and they gave me VIP access to above the stage, and I got to watch it from a different vantage point. And then also in Texas, Dallas, Texas, I got to see them VIP experience and also go bar hopping with a couple of the members. So those are like, those were really fun experiences.
So who did you get to, who'd you get to connect with in the band?
So all of them, but the one that I connected with the most was Ronnie Vannucci, the drummer. He's yeah. got an amazing personality. He's so much fun.
So did you get any like wisdom or lessons from them? Any kind of, you know, advice they shared with you?
You know, I didn't really ask the right questions,
uh-huh.
which is something that I want to do.
What did you pick up on?
What did I pick up on? Well, what I pick up on is that they are relentless. You know, they've done so many shows, and a lot of people see the end result of that, but they put in so many hours behind closed doors. So what I get from that is put in the work, and yeah. you know, there's no overnight success. They're a perfect example of that because they're now finally starting to get the recognition they deserve, but they've been around for 10 plus years and they've just been under the radar, at least in the US.
Right.
And just their persistence has been something that really inspires me.
Cool, man. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. So you go on tour with the Killers, you start to, you know, be able to connect with them a few times. So what's next in the adventure?
Yeah. So what's next in the adventure was my actual purpose. My purpose ended up being revealed to me through pain. And that was with my father. My father ended up getting a massive stroke through the complications of his diabetes. He had type 2 diabetes for most of his life. I would take him to his doctor's appointments, refill his medication, take him to the grocery store. And that was pretty much for years that I did that with him. And he ended up getting a massive stroke from the complications of his diabetes. He lost the ability to speak. He lost the ability to move his entire right side, and he was bedridden at a hospital. Mm-hmm. And I would visit him every single week for 9 months, and I watched his health deteriorate before my eyes. I saw his body shrink, and I visited him. I was visiting him on a Monday night, August 12th, 2014, mm-hmm. where he was in the worst shape that I had ever seen him in, Curtis. He was throwing up, convulsing, really hopeless and in despair. And I just wanted anything for his suffering to end. And yeah. I saw the nurses clean him up, and he looked better. And I walked up to him and I gave him a kiss on the forehead. And I told him that I am his son. He is my father. And I loved him forever. And I said the words, hasta la vista, baby, which were the three words he used to always say to me when he said goodbye from the movie Terminator.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a young boy. So I said that and I kissed him, and I went home that night. And I was praying that night, and I prayed every single night. This night was a little bit different. I was saying the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but there was a different connection when I was saying it. I was saying the same thing, which was, please end my father's suffering. He suffered enough. And I would repeat that over and over and over. And I did that for months. But this night, there was something, some force, someone mm-hmm. that was listening to what I was saying, and I felt it.
Yeah.
So I went to bed that night, Curtis, and I woke up the next day. Literally less than 24 hours later, it was the next afternoon, I got a phone call on my phone. I looked at it, and it was the hospital, and I just knew something was up. My heart dropped as soon as I saw it. So I picked up, and it was the nurse letting me know that my father passed away that morning. And I sat on my couch. I remember my dog just staring at me, and I was crying, just crying of happiness, crying of sadness. And I wanted to know why this happened to my father, because mm-hmm. I did everything the doctors told me to do, like to the T. I did everything, and I set out to fill that void, to find out what happened to him. I set out to start researching health, researching what's going on in the world, in America, and I've come to find that the same information that I came across, the same information that I share on my YouTube videos, on in my books, on stage, is the same information that would have saved my father's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that I was given all of that so I could I was given that mountain so I could show the world that this mountain could be moved. And that is my purpose. That is why I am lit up every day and inspired to educate the world, not medicate the world, mm-hmm. on what's going on with their health, both mentally and physically.
Lovely. Lovely. So your dad literally revealed, helped reveal, and it sounds like your mom too, by feeding you KFC, helped reveal what you do today.
Yes.
100%. So, okay. So dad passes away. I know you have a ton of books, and for those of you who are going to see this video, you know, what is visible here is probably like a fraction of what he has. So I know you're an avid book reader. So what's dad pass away? What's the next move?
The next move is having this desire, this burning desire to educate people so they don't have to go through what I went through.
Uh-huh.
So that means massive action. That means opening up a CrossFit gym. Well, I already had the CrossFit gym, but doing workshops at the CrossFit gym.
Yeah.
Writing my first book and educating as much as possible. With, you know, it wasn't until that happened that I felt like it was my duty and my obligation to share this information as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. So you buy a CrossFit gym, or you open a brand new one, right? You opened one.
Me and a few partners opened up a new one. Correct.
Okay. So you opened a brand new CrossFit gym. Okay. And from CrossFit, what was the journey through CrossFit into lead us kind of into Keto Camp now?
Yeah. Yeah. CrossFit was great. I love the community. We met
at CrossFit.
Yeah. And, I had a different vision for the gym than my business partner did.
Yeah.
And there was just no alignment there. So I made a decision to walk away and create something that's going to help much, much more people than one location.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I started working with the coach, and I had Shred Fat. Shred Fat was my first company. I still have it. And we did some exercises together, and we determined that Shred Fat wasn't the best branding for what I want to accomplish. So what I love to teach is keto. I love to teach the people how to use fat as their primary fuel source, the ketogenic diet as a tool. I love to teach fasting, water fasting, intermittent fasting as a tool. So that's where we came together, me and my coach, and we came up with Keto Camp. And Keto Camp spawned back in October 2018. And that is what I have dedicated the last few months to, and I will continue to dedicate educating people through Keto Camp. Keto Camp is a YouTube channel. Keto Camp is an online health coaching program, and Keto Camp is going to be an online series the academy of videos for people to go and get educated so they could learn this stuff and they could change their life, share it with their community, and have a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Love that. So you went from the Live Free to the Keto Camp, no more Shred Fat. Was there any kind of hiccups or challenges along the way of going from being a CrossFit gym owner and having a brick and mortar to show up to every day to creating this online, you know, pretty much where you have online business now that's global of jumping in? What kind of challenges were in the way that you had to kind of overcome with that?
Uncertainty. You know, not having a plan of attack was pretty much, I left not really having this plan.
Yeah.
So the uncertainty, the doubt, the self-limiting beliefs that come from time to time.
Yep.
But you know what? And you know what? That was one of the greatest decisions that I ever made, was walking away from the CrossFit gym. So many amazing things have come from it. And at the time, it was a scary decision. And that was just last July. So we're approaching a year from that point. But at the time, it was a tough decision. And it ended up being the best thing that I've ever done. I've really been able to open up and help more people, and so many opportunities and relationships have opened up from it. So just the fear and the doubt were there, but I went in that direction and I did it anyways.
So what's a day in the life now like for Ben? Now that, you know, you've gone through the health transformation. I know health is an ongoing, a constant dedication and everyday type of thing. You don't just wake up one day and, oh, I'm not going to work out or eat clean anymore. It's a constant thing. So yes. what's a day in the life of Ben's health routine that works for you?
My health routine specifically?
Yeah. What do you do for your, what's your go-to that you find that really your body works great with?
Yeah, definitely. My morning routine and my nighttime routine are a must. So what that is I wake up, I immediately feel gratitude for waking up.
Yeah.
I go to the bathroom, I urinate, and then I go back to the bed and I write down my gratitude. I write down what I'm grateful for. And then I start thinking about anybody in my life. If there is, sometimes there's not, but if anybody in my life that are bothering me, maybe it's something somebody said on Facebook or Instagram or something I heard that was a negative comment, I'll think about them. And then I'll think about something I love, like my dog or my girlfriend who's next to me mm-hmm. when I'm sleeping, when I'm in bed. And I think about that love energy and I transfer it to anybody who's bothering me. And then I start writing down my goals in present tense. So that takes me about 10 minutes or so. And then I'll go for a walk with my dog and do some Tony Robbins priming by the water, doing some meditation breathing. So that is a must every single morning. You know, if I don't do that, my day does not go as well as if I did do it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I don't check my phone. I haven't checked my phone until probably an hour after waking up.
Okay.
Then I get into the checking my emails and all that, but I don't check my phone at least 1 hour. I make sure I am present and I am aware of what's going on and I'm in an abundance mindset. Because mm-hmm. if I check my phone, it's Russian roulette, right? It's like, oh my God, I got to put out this fire. Oh my God, I got to deal with that. And I don't want that. That's a sacred time. And I know you understand that as well. That morning is sacred. So I'll do that. And then I'll go into my routine with creating content. I'll usually work out midday. I'm still fasting. I really rarely eat breakfast. I just have my bulletproof coffee, which is coffee, organic shade grown coffee,
yep.
some grass fed ghee and some brain octane oil blended together. I'll have that. And then I usually work out somewhere between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. It's not a long workout. It's about 30 minutes. Go in. I'll listen to music at this point. Music does. I do like listening to music when I work out.
Are you still doing CrossFit?
I do CrossFit style workouts.
CrossFit style?
Yeah, in the gym in my building here. So
nice.
I've been doing less of the wads and more of the strength, actually.
But got it.
CrossFit style for sure.
Yeah.
And then I'm done with my workout. I work out probably 6 times a week, 30 minutes each time. And then in the afternoon, I'll go for a long walk, 45 minutes to 60 minutes with my dog, listening and studying to an audiobook or a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night, I always make sure I have a nighttime routine as well. I wear my blue light blocking glasses when the sun goes down, which filter out the blue light.
Yeah.
And by 10 p.m. or so, 9:45, I'll stop doing whatever I'm doing if I'm watching TV or reading a book. And then I'll go back to my nighttime routine, which is gratitude again, goals again, and then going to bed. So that's how I stay mentally and physically fit.
Nice. I love that. Love that. So what book is what are you reading right now, Ben?
Oh, I'm reading this book called Beyond Fasting from my coach, Dr. Pompa. It's about to be released in a few weeks. He gave me an advanced copy, really about the science of fasting, how it's much, much more than just weight loss. Talks about a lot of the stuff Dr. John DeMartini talks about, autophagy, cellular health, and this is the one that I'm reading right now.
Nice. What does he recommend for how many times a week, a month to fast?
He recommends getting fat adapted first, which is what I recommend too. So teaching yourselves to choose fat over glucose for fuel. Otherwise, when you just go into a fast, it's going to be tough. It's like just running a marathon without training for it.
Right.
So first and foremost, getting fat adapted, eating more healthy fats, and having breakfast, lunch, and dinner, no snacks in between while you eat more healthy fats and less carbohydrates for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And then you could go into some fasting. He has a 7-week structure in here that's similar to what I teach because he coaches me on this stuff. So
yeah.
I would say start by doing a 12-hour fast, which is very simplistic. 8 p.m., you're done eating. 8 a.m., you start your next meal.
Yeah.
And then pushing that to a 16-hour fast, just skipping breakfast and going into lunch.
Yeah, I notice if I eat an earlier dinner, if I'm done eating by 7:30, I sleep really, really well.
Yes, me too.
Really well. I know if I eat late and it's a bigger meal, my sleep is not good.
Yeah, I just made a video about that. It's so funny. I just released it. I don't know if you saw it. Is that why you're mentioning it?
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, that's one of the things that I've learned and also just discovered with myself is like at least a 3-hour gap before you eat dinner and before you go to bed.
It's exactly what I said in the video, 3 hour gap. You want to, one of the worst things you can do for your health is to eat before bed, because you're not going to get good sleep, like we just said. So
yeah, it sounds like that doctor's really talking about normalizing the body of having a routine of when you're going to eat, and treating the food and the body, and really creating that routine in the system.
Yeah, what he teaches is the feast famine cycle, right? The way that our ancestors lived for hundreds and thousands of years. So totally teaching your body to have periods of time where you're in a famine, you're fasting, and then have periods of time where you're feasting. So we follow that cycle and our cells become healthier because of it. So absolutely.
Awesome. Ben, what are some lasting words that you would just love to, you know, where can we find you? I know we have the keto camp here. You have YouTube, you got Instagram, you have Facebook. How do people connect more with you who are interested in learning about specifically what you do with your business?
Yeah, definitely my YouTube channel. It's really taken off. I started the Keto Camp YouTube channel in December, but the last 2 weeks, it's really taken off. I've been putting out 2 videos at least every single week. So if you go to youtube.com/ketocamp, if you're listening, that's camp with a K, youtube.com/ketocamp. Definitely watch those videos. They're loaded with research, loaded with information, and that you'll see much more things associated with me, like my keto kickstart guide, my fasting book. That'll be a great place for you to start. And if you're on Instagram, I'm very active on there. It's @TheBenAzadi. I'd love to connect with you. I'm very accessible if you have any questions. Those are the 2 places that you could find me.